Today's shiur is Masechet Bava Metzia, Daf Samach Zayin, and we will begin on Daf Samach Vav Amud Beis, the last words on the Amud, Amar Rava. At the end of the previous shiur, we had discussed Rav Nachman's opinion regarding Mechila B'Tos, where Rav Nachman said Mechila B'Tos, if somebody waived his rights by mistake, have a Mechila. We had discussed there a situation where somebody had done a contract with something with a Dovah Shalom B'la'olam, and we know that in on the Makna Dovah Shalom B'la'olam, and yet Rav Nachman said that if somebody bought, let's say, fruit that was Loi B'la'olam that didn't yet emerge, and then once it emerged he took it, we don't take it away from him, because we learned that Rav Nachman's opinion is Mechila B'tos, have a Mechila. Says the Gemara, Amar Rava, have Yisivna Kameid Rav Nachman. I was sitting learning by Rav Nachman, and I heard this shir regarding the issue of Mechila B'tos. Ubaila Sive Aino, and I wanted to ask him a question from Aino, of Oidik, and he understood, he anticipated what I was trying to do, and Chazit on an islandess, and he showed me where islandess supports his position. And the Gemara explains itself. Because, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, Aino, what is the situation of Aino? If somebody is overcharged a sixth or more, where we have a circumstance, a Mechila B'tos, the person walked into the store and bought a bottle of milk, and a bottle of milk should cost $2, and he pays $3, he willingly paid those $3. So it's a Mechila B'tos, yet as we discussed the halachas of Aino, that's lo have a Mechila. It's not accepted. For Oidik, and in response, Chazit and Islandess, they showed me Islandess. What is the subject of Islandess? That an issue of Islandess, we see that a Mechila B'tos is a Mechila, because Hare Islandess, the subject of Islandess, is an example of a Mechila B'tos. A Mechila made an error, and the Mishnah that we're going to quote in Masechta Ksubos shows us that it's considered a valid Mechila. The Tanan, the Mishnah Masechta Ksubos teaches us Hamamenes, as we've learned many times, Midaraisa, a father has a right to marry off, and it's a Kedusha Daraisa, his daughter who's a Ketana. However, what if a girl Nebuch is a Yosoima, she doesn't have a father, or as we've discussed, you could have a Yosoima B'chayav. Yosoima B'chayav means that the girl's father had exercised his right to marry her off, and then that marriage terminated, and a father only gets one chance to marry off his daughter. So now, even though she, Baruch Hashem, has a father, her father's right to marry off is not midaraisa anymore. Still, since in those days, girls typically got married very young, they didn't want that this, Chazal did not want that this girl should be left without being able to get married. So Chazal said that this girl, her mother, her brothers, can marry off, but it's only Kedusha Derabbanan. And since it's only Kedusha Derabbanan, here we have the one situation in the halacha where a woman can initiate the termination of the marriage. And as long as she's not yet a gedayla, she could initiate miyun, which we always explain as an annulment, and annul the marriage. Or a shniya. A shniya, we know midaraisa, there are various women who are arayis, that are considered an erva to us, that we can't marry them, and the marriage is not a halachically acceptable marriage. Shlomo HaMelech u'Beistinoi, Shlomo HaMelech and his Bezdin added a number of women who are considered arayis, but they're not midaraisa, they're only midrabbanan. And if somebody marries such a woman, it's called a shniya, an islandess. An islandess is a woman who's physically unable to have children, and there are certain telling signs, I think we learned in Masechta Yevamos, that identify a woman as an islandess. All of these women, ain't them like ksuba. What does it mean that they don't have a ksuba? Two rules. One is, that we know that when a marriage ends, the husband dies, or the husband divorces his wife, he has to pay her a ksuba. These marriages, when they terminate, the husband doesn't pay ksuba. By memenis, it's obvious, because she's the one that, as I said a moment ago, initiated the dissolution of the marriage, and when it's her initiating it, so she's not entitled to ksuba. A shniya is a marriage that we don't want to see. So certainly we're going to do everything to not validate the marriage. And one of the things the Chazal do is by saying she's not entitled to ksuba. And an idleness is considered a mekach tos. The whole marriage was done in error. If the husband were to know that his wife were an idleness, he would have never married her. So this woman is not entitled to ksuba at the termination of the marriage. But there's another element to when the Mishnah says Ein lehem lo ksuba. We know, we've discussed, there are two types of properties that a woman could bring into a marriage. There's nechsei tzoyim barzel and nechsei melug. Nechsei tzoyim barzel mean assets that she brings into the marriage that are written into the ksuba, and are their value is assessed at the time of the marriage, and that value is hard and fixed. That even when the marriage terminates, the value that was written in, even if those assets decreased the value or got ruined, he has to give her that value. That din doesn't apply by these marriages. V'loy peiros. We know that the halacha is that a husband does nechsei melug. And the nechsei melug, the halacha is that the income produced by the nechsei melug goes to the husband. If the marriage terminates by one of these women, she is not entitled to peiros. What does it mean that she's not entitled to peiros? Again, the Rishonim say a number of pshat, actually two pshat. One pshat is that if the marriage we're saying wasn't a legal marriage, then all the peiros that he ate while they were married, perhaps he should have to give back to her. Says the Mishnah, he doesn't have to give it back. Another pshat is that we learned the Masechta Ksubas, the why is the husband entitled to eat the peiros of the nechsei melug? Because Chazal said that he'll eat the peiros of the nechsei melug, and in return, if she, chas v'sholem, were to get kidnapped, he'll have to pay the ransom. That then doesn't apply by these women. V'loy mezonis. Mezonis means that she doesn't get supported. So certainly the Mefarshim point out that let's say they were married and he was supporting her, she doesn't have to give back what he actually gave her for sustenance. What Lemezoinus means is that the halacha is, as we also learned in Masechta Ksubis, is that let's say a husband leaves town without leaving his wife a means of support. The halacha is lafsa v'achelas. She could borrow money to eat, and the husband has to pay back the people who she borrowed from for her mezonos. That halacha will not apply here, and the money that those people laid out, they can't go to him to collect. V'loy b'lois. B'lois mean that a wife brings into the marriage clothing. And normally the halacha is that if the marriage terminates, she gets to keep the clothing, even though they're already blahs, means that they're not in the same quality. Here she doesn't keep them. Why? Because by an illness, says the Gemara? Because it's a mechila betos. It was a mekach tos. So here we see that a mechila betos is not considered a mechila. So we have a stira. Einor seems to point out the mechila betos loy have a mechila, and here we see mechila betos have a mechila, and that's why she's not entitled to get back these things. Says the Gemara, neither Einor is a kasha, nor is Eilness a raya. Loy he. Loy Einor have a tiyufta. There is no question from Einor. V'loy eilness mesayla, nor can you bring a raya from eilness. The Gemara explains itself. Loy anor tiyufta Einar is not a question. In the case that we discussed in the previous year, the person knew what he was buying, and therefore he was Meichel. And the Gemara says that that Mechila, although it was done betos, because he didn't know that halachically Einar the Machna Dov Shaloi Bala Oilam, but since he knew what he was buying, it's considered a valid Mechila. Here, when I walk into the store, using the example we gave earlier, and I pay $3 for a $2 bottle of milk, I didn't know I was being cheated. And therefore, it's not possible to say there was a Mechila Batas. There was no knowledge. And therefore, this is not a raya to the subject of Mechila Batas. I, Islandess, where we wanted to bring a raya that Islandess is a Mechila Batas, and we see it's a Mechila because the marriage was never a marriage, and yet we're saying that she's willing to forgo all of these things that the Mishnah says she's not going to be entitled to get. The light Islandess Mesile. Because even though normally perhaps we would say the Mechila Batas is not a Mechila, here it's not a Mechila Batas. She's very satisfied to let her husband keep these things, even though the marriage is terminating, because she's an islandess and it's a Mechach Tas that he married such a woman. The Nichla, given that she never has this problem, that she's an islandess, and nobody's going to want to ever marry her, she is satisfied, she's happy, the Nichla, the typical Lashma, the people, she should have a reputation that she was a woman that was married. And it's worth it for her to give up all of these financial interests to have that reputation, and even though it cost her money, and it's not considered a Mechila Batas. Says the Gemara, he itzasa the amrala lahu gavra. There was a woman that said to a man, she appointed a man to be a shliach on her behalf. She asked this shliach, Zil Zavanli Aram Mikrivi, could you go please and buy me this piece of property from my relative? Ozil Zavanla. And he went and bought it on her behalf. Amale, but the seller, her relative, added a stipulation, saying to the shliach, Ihavali Zuzi, if I will have money, Mahadisli Nile. I want her to undo the deal. Give me back my field, and I'll give her back the money. Amla. So the shliach responded, At v'nav l'achi. And as Machlokes Rishonim, how to understand his response, the shliach's response. Some Rishonim explain, Navla was the name of this woman who had appointed him to buy the property on her behalf. And she said to her, At v'nav l'achi, you and her are relatives, and she certainly will agree that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps and you'll be able to pay back and get back your field, she'll be more than agreeable to let the deal go back to the beginning. Another pshat that the Rishonim suggest is that what he said to her, what he said to him, what the shliach said to the seller was, I don't know what to answer you because I never discussed this with this woman, but at Navlachi, you are in her relatives, and there's certainly going to be a way that the two of you could work things out. Your relatives, you'll certainly figure out a way of working it out. Amar Rabbi Barafuna, call at v'navl acha. Every time we have such a situation where such a statement was made, call at v'navl acha. Amar, whenever such a statement was made, samch v'data v'loy gomro makna. There certainly wasn't a full-fledged sale. The sale is always pending, as the Rishonim said, until he actually dies, because there's always the possibility that he will have the ability to buy back the field. So certainly, Ara Hadra, if he comes, if the seller comes and says, I have the money, here's my money, give me back my field, you have to give back the field. But now the question is, pay Ramai. What is the halacha on the payers? Because let's think about it. He sold her the property today for $1,000. And she got the property, he got the money. And so it goes for, let's say, 3 years. After 3 years, he exercises his option of giving back the money and getting back his field. But she, during these 3 years, ate the peiris of the field. Those peiris that she ate turn out to be ribbis, turn out to be interest. So now the question is, when she gives back the field, does she have to give back the peiris and will deduct it from the obligation she has to him, or is she allowed to keep it? What is the basis of the question? We've learned a number of times that the halacha follows the opinion of Rabbi Elazar, that ribbis ktsutsa, that if a malva pays loiva, real ribbis, yotzva deyonim, the malva has to return it. The question here is this payment, is this that she ate the peiris, considered ribbis ktsutsa? So as Rishonim point out, certainly according to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, who we quoted a number of times, that sat echad beribis, wherever we have a situation that we don't know for sure we're going to end up with ribis, it's not considered ribis. This is certainly a circumstance of sat echad beribis. Why? Because he may never exercise his option. And if he won't exercise his option, she gets to keep the field with the payers. Our Gemara is discussing, according to the Rabbanan, who holds sat echad beribis is considered ribis, is this considered ribis ktsutsa, that she has to return or not? And that's what the Gemara says. Perimai, do we consider the peiris like ribis ketsutza the yoytze b'dayonim, that she has to return all of those peiris, or dilma kiavak ribisu, it's only in the category of avak ribis, then yoytze she won't have to return it. Amar Rav Abachana mistabra, it seems to me that the peiris she eats, ki avak ribis hava, should be in the category of avak ribis, then yoytz medionim, and she wouldn't have to give it back. V'kein amar rava, ki avak ribis hu, then yoytz medionim. Amle abaya l'rava, ask abaya to rava, what will be that halacha in a different situation? Mashkantamai, if she lent somebody else money, and the borrower, the loiva, gave the malva a field, a property, as a mashkin, as collateral, and they didn't discuss what will be, as we'll discuss a lot getting into the further into the shir, they didn't make up what would be the status of payers that grow, what would be the status of those payers. Rather, here we're dealing with a situation that the payers, that they didn't discuss the payers. And now, let's think about it. The loiva gave the malva a field as a mashkin, and now the loiva has been eating the payers from that field. And Baruch Hashem, the time comes where the malva is able to pay back the loan, but all of those payers that the malva has been eating should be ribis. And again, the question that the Gemara is, it's certainly ribis. The question the Gemara is facing is, what type of ribis does the halacha consider this? Is it considered ribis ktsutza, or which the malva has to return to the loiva, or is it only avak ribis that he doesn't have to return? Again, amle abayi l'rava, mishkantamai, what will be the halacha in a mashkin? Hasam tamamai, mishum loikotzlei, hachanami loikotzlei. And there are two pshatim in the Rishonim how to understand like Kotzlei. One pshat in the Rishonim is that in the case where, our previous case, where the woman bought the property, they didn't prearrange that she'll be able to eat the payris as payment for the money that she's letting him hold on to. So it's not considered ribis ktsutza. If that's pshat, that's Rashi's pshat. Here too, they didn't speak between themselves that the malva will be entitled to eat those payers and should be considered ribis ktsutza. That's Rashi's pshat. The Ritva learns a different pshat. The Ritva says the definition of ribis ktsutza is like when you go to a bank and you borrow money, the bank has a specific interest rate that you're paying. Here, there is no specific rate, because we don't know for sure how much payers the field will produce. And whenever it's not clearly identifiable what the rate of interest will be, it's not considered ribis. And therefore, just like we paskined in the previous case, that it's only considered avak ribis, here too it will be only considered avak ribis. Oidama, or one could suggest, hasam zvini hacha halva. In the previous case, it really was a sale. There is an element of interest, as we explained, because she gets to eat the pears and then may give back the field. But in this essence, we only have a sale. And the Torah never speaks about ribis in the context of a sale. Here, however, we had a real loan, with just a mashkin being given to the, from the loiva to the malva. So ribis speaks to a loan, and therefore perhaps we should be stricter here than we were in the previous Gemara. Amalei. So he responded, Hasan Tamamayim Dalekotzle. There it's not considered ribis because it wasn't cuts, the two pshatim that I said. Here too it's like cuts, and it's considered like a vak ribis, and the malva does not have to give back the payers that he ate from the mashki. Omer Rapati, Ovid Ravina Uvda, once Ravina Paskind, the Choshev for Ovid Peira, the Loy Krava Barafuna. Ravina once considered these payers like they were ribis tzutza. Omer, says the Gemara. But before we go further in the Gemara, we need to introduce a number of concepts. There are a lot of different, the number of different opinions in the Rishonim how to explain these concepts. They're complicated enough. We're just going to follow Rashi's opinion, and Halavai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, should give us the Siyata D'Shmaya to figure it out. As I've been discussing, we've been discussing many times in this perek, there's a concept of a mashkin. That a loiva gives a malva mashkin. There are two types of situation. There's a mashkin that asks for the mesalaklei, and there's a mashkin that asks for the loy mesalaklei. What does that mean? The asks for the loy mesalaklei means that, let's say, and this can come up quite often, let's say the loiva gives the malva a mashkin. But once the malva receives the mashkin, there's a minimum amount of time that even if the loiva has the ability to pay off his loan, even if the loiva has the ability to pay off his loan, he doesn't pay it off. He doesn't have to pay it off. He can't get back his mashkin. Why? It makes a lot of sense. Because as we're going to learn, as we get deeper into the sugya, while the malva has the mashkin, he works with the mashkin. Now, if the malva can lose the mashkin at any time, if the loiva has the ability to pay off, the loiva could just come to the malva and say, give me back the mashkin, it doesn't make it worthwhile for the malva to work with the mashkin. So the halacha, again, according to Rashi's opinion, is that such a mashkin is not considered a mashkin. Because since the loiva cannot collect it back at his discretion, the way the Mefarshim explained Rashi's opinion is, it's looked at like a sale. That means, if the malva gives the loiva a loan, the way the halacha looks at it, like we have two separate transactions. The malva is buying the mashkin, so the loiva gets the money, and the malva gets the mashkin. And then when the minimum amount of time passes, and now the loiva comes back and gives the malva the money, now we have another sale. We have two transactions. First, the malva is giving the loiva money, and the loiva is giving him a mashkin. That's transaction one. And then we have another transaction where the reverse happens. The loiva gives money, and the malva gives back the mashkin. There is no issue of ribis in such a situation. They're looked at like two separate sales. But then there's another type of mashkin, the asher, the mesalik, which means the loiva gives the malva a mashkin, but the loiva has the right to exercise his option at any time to get back the mashkin. There we have a problem of ribis. If the malva is eating the peiris of that mashkin, how do we look at those peiris? Says the Gemara. Amar b'reid Rav Yosef Mishmei D'Rava. Ha mashkin t'ba'asad m'salki. A mashkin in a place where the loiva has the ability to any time tell the malva, I'm paying back and give me the mashkin. Ochel shezuzi. Let's say the malva ate so much peiris off this mashkin that it's equal to the value of the loan, mesalkinenlei. At that point, the loiver could say, you ate the peiris. The peiris that you eat are deducted from the amount that I owe you. And once you ate up the amount that my debt is due, that equivalent to my debt, I don't owe you any more money. Give me back the field. However, let's say the loiver was, so to speak, asleep at the switch. And ochel tfei, let's say the malva, let's say, simple story. The malva borrowed $1,000. The loiver borrowed $1,000. And he gave him a mashkin. And the malva ate $1,500 worth of peiris off this field. So $1,000 cancel the debt. The extra $500 are in the category of avak ribis. And even though the malva shouldn't have eaten them, the loiver has no recourse in Bezdin, as we keep on repeating. You can't force in Bezdin a malva to give back an avak ribis, and therefore he keeps it. Ochot fei, loy mafkinim inay. Furthermore, says the Gemara, v'lei machshvinim mishtar l'shtar, which means as follows. Again, our example. A loiver borrowed $1,000 from a malva, and he gave him a field as a mashkin, and the malva ate $1,500 of payers off the field. So $1,000 canceled the debt. But the loiver, he's obviously desperate for money, had also borrowed another $1,000 from the malva. Could those extra $500 of payers that the malva ate be used to pay off the second debt? So the Rav Loi Machshvina Mishtar L'Shtara. That's by regular situation. However, by Yisoymim, as we know, Bezdin is the Avim Shal Yisoymim, and Bezdin takes great concern for Yisoymim. There, Ochel Shir Zuzei Mesakin Alei, if the malva from the Yisoymim eats up the equivalent of payers to the debt, we immediately remove him. Ochel Tsei, if we don't remove him, whatever he ate more than the amount of the debt, Mafkinim Nei, we make him pay back to the Yisoymim. And furthermore, a machshvin l'shtar l'shtar. If there are two separate debts, we take the overage of payers that he ate and apply it to the second debt. Amar Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi goes a step further and says, "Hash the amrit ochel tfei lo mafkin minei." Now that we said that the extra above the equivalent to the debt is considered avak ribis, says Rav Ashi, if you think about it, ochel shezuzei nami. Even if the amount of payers that the malva ate, which do correspond or are less than the amount of the debt, we also can't deduct from the amount of the debt. Unless the loiver actually pays up what he owes, he can't take the malva off the field. The loiver is saying he already ate payers equal to the value of the loan. Making him using the payris to pay off the debt is using an avak ribis, because it's not ribis tzutza, and you can't force a malva to give back avak ribis. The avak ribis any yoytze b'dayonim, and therefore we now regroup. And now the Gemara is saying that if a malva got the mashkin and the malva ate payris, and he ate payers equal to the entire value of the debt, those payers that the malva ate is only in the category of avak ribis, and you can't make him give back. The Rishonim debate, we pass him like Rav Ashi, but the Rishonim debate, is it in all situations that we pass him like this, or is it specifically in this case of mashkin? Says the Gemara, over Rav Ashi, over the Yisoyim Ketanim, Kigdoilim. Rav Ashi treated Yisoyim Ketanim like Gedoilim, and therefore he treated them like Avak Ribis, and not like the Gemara said before, that we take special care of the Yisoyim. Says the Gemara, and we go back now to the concepts that I introduced earlier about a Mashkin B'Asr the Masalki, and an Ashkin and an Asr Doi Masalki. Says the Gemara, Amar Rava B'Reid Reb Yosef, Mishmei the Rava, Hai Mashkanta B'Asr the Masalka. We have this mashkin in a place where the loiver can at any time pay off his debt. So I said earlier, I quoted Rashi, that that type of mashkin, the payrus of those mashkin, the payrus of that mashkin are ribbis. And therefore the question is, can the malva eat those payrus? So it says, hi mashkin ba'as the masalki, loy necho, the malva should not eat those payrus, el ben nechyaisa. Nechyaisa means that they should agree, the malva and the loiva, that he should eat payrus from that field, from that mashkin, and every year's payrus should have, they should assign a value to. And it won't make a difference if he actually eats more than that value or less than that value, because they agreed that that's the value, and they both took a risk. The loiva may lose if he eats more payrus than they agreed. The malva may lose because he may eat less payrus than they agreed. That is the agreed upon amount that should be considered deducted from the loan on a yearly basis. That's called a mashkin b'nechyaisa. However, says the Gemara, the tzuvim derabbanan afil b'nechyaisa loynechol. Even though halachically this is acceptable, still it looks like ribbis. Because what happens here? The malva gets the mashkin. He's eating payrus, and the payrus may equal more than what's being deducted from the loan. So it looks like ribbis. And a Talmud Chacham has the obligation to always look squeaky clean, that there's no question of impropriety, and therefore the Tzuvim Drabbanan should not rely on this hetam. Says the Gemara, so does that exclude Talmid Chachamim from doing business? If a Talmud Chacham is not going to be able to lend money and get a mashkin and not know what to do with the mashkin, so it unfairly treating Talmud Chacham of a Maynechel. So ask the Mefarshim, according to Rashi, there's a very obvious approach. We said, according to Rashi, that a mashkin, the loy matzi masalki, a mashkin where the loiva can't force the malva off the mashkin until a certain term is up, there everybody agrees that the malva could eat the payrus. So why don't they just agree, the malva and the loiva, that should be the circumstance here, that the malva cannot be taken off the property until a certain date? So Rishonim answer, if this is a place, Shu discusses this too, if this is a place where all mashkins are done after the Masalki, so the Talmud Chacham, again, has to be worried what people say. And just because he entered a special deal, because he came to the shir, and he knows you could enter into this type of special circumstance, but nobody else knows that he did it, and it's not the minigamachim, it's not the custom here, so you can't rely on that. So we're back to where we started. What can a Talmud Chacham do? Says the Gemara, b'may nechol, says the Gemara, b'ktsusa. There's another approach called Ketzusa, which the Gemara will explain in a moment. And that's the approach that Talmud Chacham, who's the Malva, should use in being able to eat the payrus of a mashkin. Ask the Gemara, according to the opinion that we're going to learn in a minute, that Ketzusa is an acceptable approach. So here we're able to identify a way for Talmud Chacham to get a mashkin and eat the payrus. El amanda om ktsusa sira. According to amanda om the ktsusa is not an acceptable approach. Mayikal meimer. Again, we're back to our question: how do we take care of the Talmud Chacham ditma? So the Gemara explains what is ktsusa. So first, says the Gemara, itma ktsusa pligibar of Acha Ravina. The machlokes of Acha Ravina regarding the halachic acceptability of ktsusa. Charam ktsusa sharia. The charam ktsusa sira. Machlokes of ktsusa is acceptable or not. Actually, in the Rishonim, it seems to be that there are three opinions about ketzusa. One opinion is that it's completely mutter. Another opinion is that it's completely aser. And a third opinion is that it's the same like the ribbis that we spoke about the mashkin that we spoke about before. It's technically mutter, but it's not something that Talmud Chacham should use. Ditmar, heichi dam ketzusa, but we still haven't said what ketzusa is. Ask them, what is ketzusa? Domalei, where the malva and the loiva make the following agreement. At chamashinah achilna la b'loi nechyaisa. For the first 5 years, they agree that the malva has a right to eat all of the payrus from this field without it being deducted. Mitan ve'eloch shamina lach kula peiri. And after those 5 years, every peiri I eat from this field is deducted from what I owe you. Is deducted from what the loiva owes me. I mean, I'm the malva. Obviously, say the Rishonim, this must be in a place of Asra Delay Masalki. Because if it's an Asra the Masalki, how could they make such a long-term deal if the Loiva could ask the Malva to leave at any time? Ikadamri, others say, Kol Beloy Nechyais Oso. To have a situation where the Malva is allowed to eat Paris, and those Paris are not deducted from the debt, unacceptable. So if so, I will hecha dami ktsusa. So what is ktsusa? Damale at chamish shana mechilam benachiyasa. The first 5 years, they agree on a certain amount that will be deducted every year from the loan. But again, we don't go into figuring out exact. We don't look at exactly how much the malva ate. We eat. We act, every year we give it an upfront assigned amount. After the first 5 years, everything that he eats is deducted from what's owned. Says the Gemara. Manda also become Isa. The mandam that says that the first type of ketsusa is asur will say that first type of ketsusa that where he's eating for 5 years and none of those payers are deducted from the loan is something they can't accept. But Sharba Besraisa, he'll say that the second type, where every payer he eats is deducted from the debt. There's only a nafkamina. The first 5 years, there's an assigned amount. And afterwards, it's every payer that's deducted that he could accept. However, says the Gemara, man da'asav b'sraisa. The man that says that the second case, where there's always deduction, is still asr. So certainly in the first case, where the first 5 years the malva is eating payers and there's no deduction from the loan, he'll certainly hold will be asr. So back to where we started. We need to come up with an approach how the Talmud Chacham can get a mashkin and eat payers and it won't be ribis. Hechi shari lemechel. Answers the Gemara. Shari kemishkanta desura. A mishkanta desura is certainly mutar. What is a mishkanta desuri? The kasva hocha. The mishlam shonim eila tebuk aradabalai kasif. Which means as follows. The malva and the loiva enter into such an agreement. The malva lends money to the loiva. The loiva puts up a mashkin for the loan. And they agree that for the next 10 years, the malva is eating the payers from this field. And at the end of 10 years, no matter what happened, the field goes back to the loiva, and the loiva owes the malva nothing. That, explained the Rishonim, is certainly a sale. It's a long-term sale. With a maybe we would call it a long-term lease. Where the loiva gets the money, the malva gets the field, with all the payers that will grow from the field, and that is certainly mutter. And in fact, the Paiskim say that lahaloch lamaisa, the only mashkin that we should rely, not even we who are not Talmid Chacham, that could rely on to be able to eat the peiros, it's very simple. It could come up very often. Let's say I lend you money, and you give me a building as collateral, and I collect the rent. The only time I could collect the rent is if we make this type of an agreement that I'll be able to collect all the rent for a certain amount of years, and then after those years are up, I give you back your building, and you owe me no money. Says the Gemara. Rapapa Rapuna Bereda Rishua Amritavaya. Hai Mashkinta Ba'asadim Salka, in a place where the loiva, as I said before, can ask the malva at any time to leave the property. Since the loiva at any moment, on a moment's notice, can tell the malva, I'm paying you off and leave this property, it's not considered the malva's property. And therefore, we know the halacha is that if somebody, Rachman Slan, is nifter and he owes money, so mekaltle the yasmi, the metaltlim that the Yisoyimim inherit from the father, lemishtabdil balchoyv, are not obligated to be used to pay off the father's debt. Even though I've quoted many times, there is a takonis ga'inim that we now follow, that the metaltlim that the father left over, we do use to pay off debt. But according to the Dina of the Gemara, those metaltlim are not. Property, everybody agrees, is considered subject to the debt. But this property that the father is holding on to as a mashkin, that can be taken back from the loiva at any moment, is not considered property that is subject to pay off the father's debt. Furthermore, we know that if a father dies and he had a bechor, the bechor is entitled to a double portion. Vein bechor noitel pishnayim. And furthermore, shvius mishantasa. The halach is that shvius cancels all debts. But if there's a debt that is a mashkin attached to it, the debt is not canceled by shmita. This mashkin that the loiva could take back at any moment is not considered a loan with a debt that shvius doesn't cancel. However, Ambassador Loi Masalki, when the Malva received the Mashkin, that the Loiva can't take him off the property until a certain date, that property is considered the Malva's, and therefore Bachoiv Goiver Menu, if the Malva dies, it's considered property that is subject that the Bali Choiv could collect from. Bachar Neutel by Pishnayim, it's considered part of the father's estate. Then Shvius Mishamta, so it's considered a loan with a Mashkin that Shvius doesn't cancel. A mashkin that the loiva could pay up any time, even the tamarim that already fell off the tree, the loiva could take back. It's not considered the mashkins. However, if the malva picked up those dates in his basket, then they're already considered the malvis, and the loiva can't take them. Ulaman Dama says the Gemara, Kalev shalakeach brishus moicher, kana lakeach, if something falls in to the person's kalim, they're considered his. That opinion will hold. I feel like vinabasisni, even if the malva didn't pick up those fruits, they're already considered his, and the loiva can't put his hands on them. There are Rishonim, I think it's the Miri, that says that as soon as the pears are completely ripe, that also, those parents already considered the malvas. Says the Gemara, Pshita, Ba'asu the Masalki, if it's a place where normally the loiva could pay off at any time, Vomer, and the loiva says, Lemastalkna, you know what? I'm not going to treat you that way, as I explained earlier, and I'm not going to take you off this mashkin until a certain date. Hakamad Lemastalkna, if the loiva is willing to accept such an agreement, fine. Ella, says the Gemara, but ask the loiva masalka. This is a place where normally the loiva cannot ask the malva to give back the mashkin until a certain time. Va'oma, and here the loiva says, I'm willing to give you this mashkin with the stipulation, the mistalkna, that I could pay you up at any time and take back my mashkin. So certainly you could enter into any deal as long as it's legal. The question that the Gemara asks is, tzarech l'miknamenei oiloi. To affect it, that it should be valid, is there a kinyan required on that? Rapap amar loy tzarech l'miknamenei. Rav Sheshes b'Reider of Idei amar tzarech l'miknamenei. Since this is not the normal situation, and here the malva is giving up something that he's supposed to get, there has to be a kinyan. V'hilchasa tzarech l'miknamenei, a kinyan is required. Machloikas Rishonim, how to understand this Gemara. Most Rishonim seem to learn, that's Pash Pshan in the Gemara, that while the Malva and Loiva are working out the loan agreement, this is what the Loiva asks from the Malva, and the Gemara's question is a kinyan required. Taisa says that's not Pshan in the Gemara. Because Taisa says, if this is part of the original loan agreement, of course you could enter into any agreement that you want to. Here we're referring to a situation where the loan agreement was signed, sealed, and delivered. And now the loiva wants to say that even though this is a place where normally I can't make you leave, I want to have that right. And the Gemara's questioning is to affect it, a kinyan required or not. Says the Gemara, Am of Ezel v'Esi Zuzi. Let's say the malva is on the property, on the mashkin. And the loiva tells the malva, you know what? Baruch Hashem, I have the funds to pay you up. So the halach is lo yachol. At that point, the malva may no longer eat from the payers. If he's saying, I'm certainly bringing you the money. However, ask the Gemara, why will be ezel ve'etruch v'isizuzi? The loiva doesn't say, I already have the funds available. He says, I'm going to attempt to get the funds. Is that considered like he has the funds and the malva may no longer eat the payers or not? Ravina Amar Achol, since he doesn't have the funds already available, the halacha is that the malva could continue eating the peiros. Umazutra prayed Ramari Amar Lo Yachol, that since the loiv has identified, has declared his intention of paying up, he can no longer eat it. Vilchasa, and that indeed the halacha is Lo Yachol, that as soon as the loiv declares his intention to pay off, the malva may no longer eat the peiros. However, says the Meiri a very important point. He says, let's say the loiver keeps on doing this. He keeps on telling the malva, I'm getting the money. And therefore the malva, learning our Gemara, and a religious Jew follows the din, stops eating the payers. And then the loiver keeps on never delivering, then he doesn't have to pay attention to the loiver. If the loiver has shown on more than one occasion what he says is not really to be taken seriously, the malva doesn't have to take it seriously. Only when the loiver doesn't have a track record does he have to accept what the loiver says and stop eating the payers.